then that is the balance, is that as we reported at the last meeting, we've been making $13,000 a month payment to the Coast Seafood. You know, that sounds reasonable to me, the interest principal balance, that there would be approximately a $10,000 principal reduction on that. And so, yeah, we make $13,000 a month payment. And then every January we would make a $40,000 lump sum payment. And, you know, the direction that I have from the board and that we're implementing is to try to accelerate the payments as quickly as we can on that loan.
Thank you. I guess any other questions or comments from the public on this item? Any questions or comments from the board? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to pass item 8B.
Move that we approve item 8B.
Second.
Here we have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Doss?
Yes.
Commissioner Higgins?
Yes.
Commissioner Dale?
Yes.
Commissioner Marks?
Yes.
And Commissioner Coleman?
Yes. Thank you. Okay, moving on from the consent calendar to new business. Consider adopting resolution number 2020-07, a resolution adopting the final fiscal year 2020-2021 Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District budget and goals.
Adam, do you have those goals?
Do you have a presentation on this?
Yeah, I'll share my screen now.
Yeah, go ahead and scroll that down, Adam. So what staff is recommending that the board essentially is to approve resolution 2020-07, which would adopt the fiscal year 2021 budget. At the last meeting, the board approved the preliminary budget, and we had mentioned that there were these projects that were cut from the division recommended budget. And the first one was, you know, the RMT brownfield piles, as we have to remove those piles, those brownfield grant money, and then there's some matching funds, and the cost to haul those away was more than was originally projected. And so we felt like we needed about $70,000 for that. And so then what this table does is that we believe we went out and tried to find money on how we could complete those projects. And so then on this particular item, is that we looked, because the board transferred the Fields Landing Boatyard, but we didn't reduce the utility expenses from the Fields Landing Boatyard. And so we looked from the original budget. And so we were able to reduce approximately $25,000 from the utilities from Fields Landing Boatyard. We also looked, and there's an agreement that the board approved last year that we didn't get included in this agreement. And so we're asking to approve that. And that's basically between the Humboldt Bay Development Association and the Harbor District, that we did not include those revenues in the preliminary budget. And so we're asking the board, there's an additional $36,000 per year that comes from the Humboldt Bay Development Association, that they pay the Harbor District to administer those programs. And then we didn't include any potential increase in property tax revenues. And so we were, instead of the traditional 2% property tax increase over the previous year, we're recommending that there be a 1% increase in the property tax revenues. And so then if the board agrees, then staff recommended, and the budget that is included in your packet includes $70,000 to complete the RMT to Brownfield program. The next thing that we were looking at is basically for the ocean outfall pipe that we wanted to get that taken care of. And so then we're about ready to enter into an agreement with Simpson Paper Company, because they're going to lease the fireboat to do the inspection of their ocean outfall pipe. And so they'll pay us $12,000 to do this, to lease the ocean outfall pipe. And then the board previously approved the lease agreement with the Peninsula Community Service District for the wastewater treatment plant. And when the board approves the fee schedule and that's in operation, and Commissioner Marks had mentioned that's, you know, in construction, then those two sources of funding, which would give us $20,000, which we're getting the cost estimates, and we're hoping that we'll be able to have them install the anodes on Redwood Marine Terminal 2 at the exact same time. You know, the second, there was some additional costs that we had to cut from the dredge, basically the mitigation that we were looking to do to be able to use the suction dredge on the Bay Street property. And so we're hoping to tap into the dredge fund reserve funds that the board collects each year and take $85,000 from that. We're still looking for money, but we did not find a funding source at this point for the Shelter Cove Fish Cleaning Station, which we estimate at $65,000. We're definitely not giving up on that, but we just didn't identify that yet. And then an additional $50,000, you know, for the multi-purpose dock for the RMT2, kind of the matching funds for that. And so can you scroll down a little bit, Adam? And so these items that are highlighted yellow within the budget are the specific location where those items were added into the budget. All the rest of the numbers are exactly the same as was in the preliminary budget, with the exception of on the income side, the dredge surcharge, the $85,000, the property tax revenues. Each one of these corresponds with the income stream above. And so what we're asking the board is to approve the full budget, and these highlighted represent the additions or the changes from the preliminary budget that was approved. Go ahead, Adam. So then on the expense side, it's the same thing, is then when we go in and we look at each one of these things, we had to allocate the money. And scroll down just a little bit farther, Adam. And so in the end, from the income and the expense side, which is down here at the very, very bottom, the total revenues and the total expenditures, there is $26,000, you know, on the income loss side. This is just a snapshot budget. What this doesn't show is what the current cash balances of the accounts that we have on hand. And we're currently doing a cash flow analysis that we've done in detail. We've reviewed it. And the current balances that we have in the dredge fund right now are approximately $528,000 that are in the dredge fund. Because again, we received reimbursement from FEMA that recapitalized the expenditures that we had last year. And there is an additional, $400,000 in the general fund reserve that we have. These are the reserve funds that we have on hand. And so from an income and expenditure standpoint, we're on the positive side if the board approves this. And again, we have additional funds that are currently in the reserve accounts that at this point we're in analysis. And if we do have additional funds on a project by project basis, then we would bring those back to a board for approval. What the board has set up a budget subcommittee, and I believe that's Commissioner Dale and Commissioner Doss. And what we would ask the board is that, you know, over the next month to 2 months, is that we work with the budget subcommittee to try to find the additional money for the Shelter Cove and the RMT2 multi-purpose dock when we're looking at our cash flow. What staff really wants to do is we're going to get these bids from the dredging, and we need to really see what those expenditures are, and that's why we do not really want to tap into any of those reserve funds right at the moment. The bids are going to come back, and we'll have the bids, and they're going to come before the board on, I believe it's July 16th. And so if we could work with the dredge subcommittee over the next couple of months to look at the cash flow and really make sure that we have all the funds that we need for this dredging project. And if we do have additional money, then I'd seek the advice of the budget subcommittee to come back and see if we can fund some of those projects. And so can you scroll down just one more thing? I'm not going to go over all of these goals, but included in your packet, we have all the goals that were included in your previous package, because we would be asking the staff to look at, you know, to implement these goals. And so with that, what I'm asking the board to do is to adopt resolution 20-07, which would adopt the 2020-21 budget as is included in your packet.
I'll move that we adopt the 2020 budget.
Second.
Sorry about that. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion from the board?
Yeah, I think, these are challenging times, but Shelter Cove has a lot of charisma. Grant funding agencies. So let us redouble our effort to network with the existing MLPA grant network, because what we're trying to do here is something that the public really wants, and that is not just the fish full in the tide pools. And we have committed, and we've been, we've faced challenges, so we're a little short on the budget there, but, I think Commissioner Dale will agree, we're good for it. We're going to help folks down there. And I don't think the state can go after those folks while we're trying in good faith to meet the needs and change the practices. So I'm in favor of the budget, and on that particular issue, those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Pat. Anything else from the board?
I'm sorry, could I just add one last thing before you open it up to the public?
You may.
There was a question earlier on about the Coast Seafood loan, and I forgot to bring that up into my report. Could you scroll up just a little bit in the budget, Adam, wherever that's at? In the budget expenditure table. Right there. Down one more. Yeah, at the very bottom of this Exhibit B. So you can see at the very bottom, there's a row that's called D2, where it says Coast Seafood Loan. Right here in the under the debt, we have three debts that the Harbor District has. We have the 2014 bond, which comprises the deepening project that the Harbor District did. And so approximately $207,000 of expenditures comes out of the Tidelands revenue that we have. And then, could you go back to that, Adam? And then the other-
That's a rollover. Comes that's a rollover from a 2002 loan. So 2014
was refined. And so that's associated with the original funding from when Woodley Island Marina was constructed. The Coast Seafood loan is the $196,000. And again, that was for when they removed the black liquors from the Redwood Marine Terminal 2. That $196,000, I believe, equates to $13,000 a month. Plus a one-time payment of January of each year of $40,000. So $13,000 per month plus $40,000 on a January payment for that $196,000. And then the BBVA loan, the NMTC, that's New Market Tax Credits. That's basically comes out of the Redwood Marine Terminal 2 budget. And that's to pay for the improvements that the new roof and the siding and the other improvements that the Harbor District did when we acquired the property to make it ready for the tenants. So I wanted to go over the debt service because that was one of the specific questions that was asked.
Thank you, Larry. Any other questions or comments from the board before I open it up to the public? Hearing none, again, I'll just ask first if there's any public who wish to make comment on this agenda item to first identify yourself so I can get a list, and then we'll go through and take public comment.
Ken Sawatsky, yes, please.
Okay, anyone else? All right, it sounds like it's you, Ken.
Okay. I will reiterate what I said back in the years gone by when Patty Tyson did this. The budget gave all of us a better perspective. It had the prior year's budget before, what it was budgeted and when it came in actual. That was a great tool. And probably had, 10 pages worth of notes to go with it to explain different things. That also was something. So you might wish to go back historically and see what happened there. I'm not sure what your requirements regarding that are, actually. Maybe it was just a service provided. The question on the Coast Seafood, which I appreciate you saying where it is on this, but the question I had was what are the terms? In other words, is it a 10-year note at 3%, or what are the terms? That's something that I would like to have. The other question I have is why is that being paid out of the general fund when that was specifically borrowed for your RMT2, and so I don't understand why that is not actually an expense from that, which of course right now, as we're all aware, the net income on your Redwood Terminal Number 2 is a negative $460,000. That's going to put you up, in my opinion, accounting wise, should actually be in excess of $650,000. And so I just don't understand why that's being paid out of that account. It seems to be, should be in a different line item there. The other thing being, as far as making notice, whether it's $460,000 and change or whatnot, that is your money pit. I mean, you have $133,808 from your marina there, but that's one third or less than one third, I think, of the, even without the adjustment that I think is appropriate. And so when we come up on the topic later, regarding money from that particular project, you have a cash cow there, and you need to use that cash cow to your best ability, and that's your outfall. And that should hopefully make up some of the major negative part that you've got for marine the terminal there, number two project, RMT2, and hopefully balance things back out. So I get a chance to talk on that one a little bit later, I believe. That's what needed. But I'm still asking for the terms. And if you only want to do this later as far as a public record request, I could receive it that way and then make comment on it. But like is it 3% for 20 years? Or what are the current terms that were renegotiated on the Coast Seafood loan? So thank you for my opportunity to speak a little bit on your budget today.
Thank you, Mr. Sawatsky. Any more comments from the public? Hearing none. So Larry.
Stephen, I'm pretty proud of what we've negotiated with Coast. So.
Excuse me, I was Patrick. Go ahead, sorry. It's okay. Is it appropriate to talk about the specific terms and conditions of that loan on this agenda item, or should that be something we agendize later?
Well, I can just tell you what these payments here. Let me just tell you where we're at on this. Is that a couple of months ago we had most recently the course? What happens is basically each year. Coast Seafood basically is auditing their books, and then the Harbor District is auditing, you know, our books. And so basically the finance departments got together and said, hey, here's what the accounting is on that we're showing on our side, and here's what the accounting is on the Harbor District side, right? So that we basically reconcile those. And so so that was done most recently. And so the interest rate hasn't changed from the original. And so we're still paying the same interest rate. There were no assessed, we're not paying any additional interest. We're not paying any late fees or any additional fees. We're just continuing to make the same payments on an accelerated payment schedule is where we're at. And I can say that, you know, the Harbor District is good on the payments that we have to Coast Seafood, and Coast Seafood has is good on, they have three leases with us. They have two tideland leases, one subtidal, one intertidal, and then the upland lease that they have, and all those are in good standing. And so that's really is where we're at. And ultimately the goal is that I'm working on with the Coast Seafood, based upon the direction of the council or the board, is that as soon as we get a lump sum payment from, ideally it would come from the Nordic Aqua Farms, because as part of the agreement, they would pay us $534,000, I believe it is, for the substation. As soon as that lease goes into effect, then we would use those funds to pay down the debt service. And what our calculations show is that by the time the Nordic comes online and they have their permits, then those funds should pay down the entire debt service on the Coast Seafood loan.
Thank you. Okay. And then, sorry, Patrick, you had something to say?
Good job, Larry. That's what I wanted to hear, Stephen, just that synopsis.
And then the reason, you know, the reason why, and this is just, the board can do what you want to, is the reason why I put that on the general side as opposed to RMT2, you can move it back if you want to, is because it was my understanding that, you know, when the Harbor District did that project, the concern was that the contamination was going to go into the bay. And so that was, it really wasn't, the Harbor District was not really liable for that contamination. It wasn't, you know, our, and so anyway, the Harbor District reached out to remove an environmental hazard that was going to potentially impact Humboldt Bay. And so I just looked at that like it was more of a general expense as opposed to a property expense. But if you want to move that item over into the other column, you know, we could do that as well.
Commissioner Higgins agrees with that assessment.
Thank you. And yeah, I would agree as well. The action that was taken was to the benefit of every industry and every user on the bay. So it wasn't to the benefit of that particular property. Any other comments or questions from the board? And I believe we have a motion and a second to adopt, let me look at resolution number 2020-07. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Dale.
Yes.
Commissioner Higgins.
Yes.
Commissioner Marks.
Yes.
Commissioner Doss.
Yes.
And President Coleman.
Yes, motion passes. Moving on to item 9B, consider amending ordinance 6, an ordinance establishing procedures for the conduct of meetings, elections of officers, and the passage or approval of ordinances and resolutions for the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District.
So moved, Pat Higgins.
Do we have a second? Or should we listen to a report first?
Give a report. I'll second it. Ms. Gregg.
Thank you, Greg. Did you have a report on this item, Larry?
Just ever so briefly, what we're looking at doing is changing the meeting from the fourth Thursday to the second Thursday of the month, and then to consider amending the time of the meeting, you know, from the current 7 o'clock to 6 o'clock for the open session. That's the consideration. You're not asking you to make any decision tonight, but if you want us to proceed that way, then we would draft the ordinance and then bring that back. And then the last thing is to clean up the language that's in the ordinance that's really, really specific, and then move that into the business matters resolution where it can be modified and changed much more simple, but still have a process in there of the agenda, but move it out of the ordinance and into resolution format that the board evaluates every year, every January.
I like middle of the month better.
So I guess what's been going on is that our meeting agenda is specifically dictated through an ordinance, and so we can't make any changes or anything. The time and date of the meeting is also dictated through the ordinance. And so was it your attention? Because it was, I was thinking, would the time and date of the meeting still be in the ordinance, or would that then be in the resolution that the board passes each year?
Well, when we draft the ordinance, I'll review it with Ryan, and just because there's certain things that we have to do in the you know, per the Brown Act, and I'll just confer with him, and whatever the requirements are that need to be in the ordinance, we would put that in there. Also, I think in the Harbors and Navigation Code, it says something. We'll put whatever is required to be in the ordinance, you know, in the ordinance. When we bring it back, we'll evaluate that.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that would be my feeling, that we put just the bare minimum in the ordinance and then use the resolution. And then I will just have to say too, considering the time and date, I know I brought it up to you. The reason I was bringing up moving back to the second Thursday instead of the fourth is because I am attending the RCE meeting, which is also at this time on the second Thursday. And that involves many more jurisdictions and council members than us. I would unfortunately still want to stay at the 7 o'clock time, not the 6 o'clock time, but would prefer that to be a matter of the resolution, not the ordinance. Any other comment from the board? All right, then I guess we'll bring it. Oh, you say, Richard?
I really like the 6 o'clock meetings.
I'll deal with it later. Thank you.
No, someone I'll deal with it later.
Turn the valve off. Someone's having a conversation that's not muted. Maybe Adam, you can mute people except for whoever's speaking. So Richard, go on, you were saying?
No, I would just say my preference is 6 o'clock. Seven o'clock's past my bedtime. You'll understand when you get my age.
My preference is too. It's just now I have a job where they actually expect me to be there till five. but I guess as long as we're starting at five, I wouldn't be able to do any more of these 2 hour long closed sessions. But that we're going to bring back anyway, right? So that's not something we need to hash out right now. Barry, you're muted.
Yes, we will bring that back to the board, and you can decide whether you want it 6 or 7. And anything else, there's no final decisions. tonight.
Okay, this is just a matter of we're directing you to redo that ordinance, which then has to go through a couple readings and everything, right?
That's correct. It'll be noticed, a noticed hearing.
Okay. All right. Are there any comments from the public on this item?
Sorry about the comment before. I had a major water leak that I had to direct somebody that I was going to deal with later. So I do have a comment, Kent Sawatsky, on this, if it's okay.
Go ahead, Kent.
So, you know, I strongly support you changing it to the whatever is the second Thursday rather than the fourth. I don't think that conflicts with a lot of our holidays. You have a tendency frequently to conflict with, I think, whatever Thanksgiving and Christmas or something there. So that makes sense. Of course, if you do change this, a lot of your closed sessions have been two-hour closed sessions, I've noticed lately, starting at 5 and going to 7. I can understand from Richard's viewpoint, it'd be nice to get the meetings over a little bit earlier. And so personally, but I think your ordinance and these two things should jive whenever possible. So I guess you can amend it kind of after the fact, but it's always nice for the public when they go through documents of any consequence such as this to see a consistency factor in there. So sounds like some good changes. The other thing that the public would like to see, and I will do this, when you have your special meetings, if you can also have them on Thursdays during the regular time set that you normally have for your meetings, that's always beneficial to the public to enable us to kind of participate, especially when you have special or last-minute meetings. So I don't know whether that's included in this or not, but when you come to your next phase here, hopefully you will include that in there as far as your policies, procedures, and protocols for your meetings. So thank you for my opportunity to speak on this.
Thank you. Any more comments from the public? Hearing none. Is this an item that we're actually voting on or just directing you to prepare an ordinance to bring back to a future meeting?
No, it's not an action. I don't believe I need any vote. I'll just prepare it, work with Ryan to prepare it and bring it back to you.
And I'm taking my motion back.
You can keep that one for future use. All right, then. So it sounds like you have your direction, and this will come back to a future meeting. Moving on to item C, report on draft Red Terminal 2 ocean outfall rate study.
Yes, so basically the board has two, basically there are three users of the ocean outfall that we have lease agreements with. The first one is DG Fairhaven, and the terms of the DG Fairhaven that they pay us is basically fixed within the resolution that they had. When the board approved the leases for the use of the outfall with Nordic Aqua Farms and also the Samoa, the Peninsula Community Service District, what was written in there that the rate would be determined based upon a rate study that was done. And so we prepared the rate study, and essentially we've looked in detail at what the costs to operate the ocean outfall. And the costs to operate the ocean outfall are based upon, you know, what the real costs are. And so staff didn't do this on its own. We worked with SHN, and then SHN, the person that does rate studies for other jurisdictions, basically prepared the draft rate study. But our staff went through it in detail and did an assessment of what the true costs are. The one thing that I really want to focus on is and Adam, you have the control of it, under the reserves where it has replacement reserve dive inspections right there. Because that's really is one of the bigger costs that we have and one of the more important things that we have to do within the outfall. And so within that rate study, you know, what we looked at is how many inspections that do we have to do and what are the specific things that we have to take place. The Harbor District, since we've acquired the ocean outfall, there were dive reports in 2015, 2016, 2017, and 2019. And so we've regularly done dive inspections and replaced the anoids and cleaned out the jets. In the last year, we did two major flushes of the ocean outfall where we coordinated with Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, and they filled up the 2 million gallon tank. And then we did a major flush out the ocean outfall at the exact same time as the divers were out in the ocean and reviewing the, basically cleaning out the ports that are there. And literally you can see the video where, you know, as we're releasing a 500,000 gallons of water all at one flush, then you can see the plume coming out of the 3/4 inch ports that are out at the outfall. And so each time that we do these dive inspections, it's typically about a 3-day operation. And we have to replace the anoids and the mobilization costs, and all of these kinds of things are quite expensive. Within the rate study, we really looked at three different scenarios. And so I'm not going to go over all of these. They're included within your packet, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. But this first one, go back up, Adam, to the header. So the table one, where it says revenue for discharge under gravity flow without using the pump station. And so the first assessment is DG Fairhaven and the wastewater treatment plant, they connect below the pumping station. And so in other words, we don't even turn on the pumping station because the flow isn't that much. And so there's really are no electricity cost or very little electricity costs. We don't have to have basically the big, huge pumps and the other things that go in there. And so when DG Fairhaven and the wastewater treatment plant, they connect below the pumping station, and so the costs are dramatically less. When Nordic Aqua Farms comes in and they start discharging, you know, 3 million gallons a day in phase one, 6 million gallons a day in phase two, those levels of discharge will require that the pumping station gets upgraded. And so what you'll notice is down in the area, there's an item that's called replacement reserve pumping station. And in the phase one, there's no costs that are associated with replacing the pumping station, because with the wastewater treatment plant, again, they don't need the pumping station. And then go down to the number, the third one, Adam. So in the table two, what the table two envisions is, stick with the table two for a second. So the table two is basically when Nordic Aqua Farms comes online and then they have to upgrade the pumping station. The assumption under this is that Nordic Aqua Farms will pay all the cost to upgrade the sewer, or I'm sorry, not the sewer lift station, but the pumping station, right? That they would pay to replace the big pumps and the systems, et cetera. And so what this shows again is there's no debt service that's associated with that, that they would pay those upfront costs. Go down to the next one, Adam. In the table three, what the table three analyzes, go down to the next table, Adam. So what the next table shows, table three, is that, oh, I guess it is right here, is that there's a debt service of $812,000 at 4.5% interest for 10 years, which would require an additional $100,000 payment. And so under this scenario, it assumes that Nordic wouldn't pay those upfront costs, the Harbor District would have to pay those costs, and so therefore we would have to spread those costs among the users, the different users. And so I want to point that out because that the debt service is really is a key thing when we're looking at this, is who's going to pay to upgrade those pumping costs. Then go down to the table four, Adam. So the table four within the plan, can you scroll down, Adam? So within the table four, the rate study that we came up with is to have basically a two-tiered structure. So the top is a government, or I'm sorry, is what's called, what we call a commercial rate study. And then the table five, it's the exact same table, but what this is this is for government uses. And so when we were looking at the costs for the outfall, we just could not make it work, quite frankly, with the wastewater treatment plant, because the individual cost to the users would have to be so high, because there's relatively few households that are going to be connecting in particular to the phase one just for the town of Samoa. And so what we did was we established a rate study that, as an example, if the in the top, the commercial, if you're discharging between 7,000 and 350,000 gallons, it's $1.32 per 1,000 gallons a day. But the rate for the government would be 50% or half of the cost of the commercial rate. And so it significantly reduces it. And so the way these tables work is that there's a base charge for up to 7,500 gallons per day. And that's essentially 500, that was a set at $500 a month for the commercial users. And so whoever connects in, because again, we want to attract small aquaculture users to go in. For the really small people that want to connect in and use the ocean outfall, if they're discharging less than 7,500 gallons a day, then their cost would be $500 a month to do that. Then the next tier gets to 7,000 to the 350,000. And again, that would be $1.32 per 1,000 gallons a day. And then between 350 and 1,000, it goes down to 22 cents. And then between 1 million and 3 million, it goes down to 3 cents. And then between 3 and 6 million, it goes down to a penny. And then if you're doing 6 million or greater, there's a slight decrease in that. And so then what this shows over here to the right is basically what year that we anticipate these users to come online. Because currently the DG Fairhaven comes and they're paying us approximately $84,000 a year to discharge. Because Taylor Seafood is currently discharging into the leach field, when Nordic comes on board, we're going to have to get rid of the leach field. So that aquaculture waste would then go in and they would pay that minimum $500 per month to discharge their aquaculture, essentially wash water, out the ocean outfall. And then the Nordic Aqua Farms, they wouldn't kick in until approximately year five when they would actually start discharging. Because remember, they're going to get their permits. Then they're going to be a construction phase. And there's going to be, it's going to take time before the full operation because, from the time the hatchery is put in place and they start growing their stock, it's going to take a couple of years before their whole operation is put into play. And so down in the second column, what we're showing is the town of Samoa's wastewater treatment plant. They are permitted to discharge 26,000 gallons a day. And so they would pay $6,000 for the first 7,500 gallons per day. And then they would pay an additional, what is it? Looks like, do I have my?
$557
for a total of $10,457 is what they would pay to discharge out the ocean outfall.
Right.
And when they came to us, and I don't have that number exactly in front of me, in the preliminary stages of working with the engineers and the Peninsula Community Service District, they were hoping that it was going to be in the range of the $8,500 to like the $10,000 to $12,000 range. And so when we were looking at these rate studies, I had a lot of users that I was trying to get into mind, which number one, I really wanted it to be affordable for the wastewater treatment plant. And then when the full on town, entire Samoa Peninsula wastewater treatment comes online, that we have the rate study set up so we don't, again, gouge them and make it affordable for the entire Peninsula Community Service District. And so then the last thing I just wanted to show the board within this table is I just put this on there as an example if the city of Eureka were to connect into the wastewater treatment plant, instead of discharging into the bay like the Water Quality Control Board does, then the fees, in the first place, the ocean outfall could handle that much volume. But in the second place, is that's really when you would more than break even. With the way this shows is with DG Fairhaven paying us $84,000 and you changed the way that I did this table, Adam. I'm sorry. Down below here is the cash flow. So in year one, with these users, basically the $84,000 from DG Fairhaven and this $10,000 from the Samoa, which together equals this $94,000. You know, the expenses would be $147,000. And so we're still not breaking even, you know, on the expenses. But as we begin to come online with more users, then we're beginning to, like in year five, then we're exceeding the amounts of the expenditures that we have. And we're actually would start to either make a profit or could potentially reduce the expenditures depending upon how we get set into play. I guess the bottom line, to put this in a nutshell, is that it's expensive to run the ocean outfall and that we need users in order to make it effective. And when the Nordic Aqua Farms comes online, it should pencil out and pencil out in two ways. Number one is that we'll have the cash flow to operate it. Number two, that we will actually be able to maintain the ocean outfall like it should be maintained. This system is rate study is designed so that we can really maintain the outfall and do all the inspections that we need and to do the maintenance and repair work that we have to do. Because we always have to remember that we're discharging a wastewater treatment plant's outfall. And when Nordic Aqua Farms comes here, there can't be any glitches in the system. It has to work all the time and there can't be any problems. And so we have to do the dive inspections like clockwork. We have to regularly clean it. We have to maintain it and we have to professionally operate it. And so I'm not asking the board to approve this tonight. Really what I wanted to do is just present this to you and to the public. And then we're gonna, over the course of the next month, we're gonna do outreach to the Peninsula Community Service District, Nordic Aqua Farms, and the other users and the public as well. And then what we'd like to do is to come back at your regular meeting in July and have you consider it. We're available to answer any questions that you have. And if you want to discuss this further over the course of the next month, don't hesitate to give me a call.
Thank you, Larry. Any questions or comments from the board?
Yeah, the fall is one of our key assets. I appreciate the details.
Yes, agreed. Anything else? Any questions or comments from the public on this item?
Yes, please, if I can, Stephen Kent Sawatsky.
Go ahead, Kent.
So, I looked at this purchasing all the parcels out there at one time, and the highest value asset is the outfall, because it's required. And I don't see any. One of my first things is what is the useful remaining life of the outfall? You need to take that and amortize that. What is it going to cost if that deteriorates beyond the point of standard maintenance and you have to replace it? Well, I don't know. Is it $1 billion? But you really need a return on investment or return or ability to replace that outfall should it reach nothing lasts forever. So there is a certain amount of time there. The other thing I did want to mention, I haven't seen any indication before tonight that the Simpson outfall was being looked into. And there's a reason for that, most likely. I believe Mr. Arkley still has control of that outfall, if I recall. And when you're looking at the Eureka discharge, that's a significant portion of your puzzle here. But if that ends up being financially viable to rent out the other outfall, and or that would be financially viable to run other things within that easement, such as your Trans-Pacific cable or whatever is coming in there, you may have some competition. I don't believe that you are lacking any ability or need to consider this as far as a profit maker, and it should be as close to a profit maker instantly as you can. Now, I realize you want to keep these rates low for all these people, but they're not just low, they are exceedingly low, considering the alternative that they don't have any other option. And I think, in fact, Mike Wilson in the supervisor chamber, he frequently says it's not the position of the county, and of course that would be the same with you folks, to provide services that other people personally benefit from at a loss of public funds. So I really don't know. I think you need further analysis on this, and an analysis as far as what the existing life of that asset is, and when it will go away, and how will you budget replacing that? Because as you've said, it's a service that's going to be required. You're going to have a contractual arrangement with these people, and I don't know. Maybe you have an assessment that says it's going to last 80 years or something. But anything less than that needs to be amortized, and you have to be able to replace it. You need a cost estimate for that also. Thank you for the opportunity. I think you need more information. Bye.
Thank you. Any other comment from the public?
Yeah, this is Chris Watt. I had a question about the portion about the City of Eureka connection and how that factored into your rate study. I didn't follow that. It seemed like you were starting down that road, and then there was something different with your presentation. Can you restate that?
I'm sorry. Can you restate your full name?
Christopher Watt, WATT.
All right. Thank you. Larry, can you answer that? So what is up with the potential, and this is just like a potential of Eureka sometime connecting into the discharging out of the outfall out instead of the bay?
Yeah, I just put that on as, because it's not in the near term, it's not in anybody's plan, but there's been a lot of discussion about from the water district and other people. You know, people should realize that, you know, the Harbor District's outfall is a lot different than the Simpson outfall that's at the Fairhaven. The Simpson outfall is only a half mile. It only goes out a half mile, where ours goes out a mile and a half. And so, you know, the preference would be to go farther offshore. I mean, all this is treated and everything, but it's always better to go farther out offshore. There's a lot more dilution and less probability for problems. And so what we were really looking at was, you know, if we plugged in, and you could eliminate the City of Eureka and put in another user. If we had another user, you know, as big or bigger than the Nordic Aqua Farms, then it completely changes the dynamic of the ocean outfall, and more than pays for the cost of it. And we believe it would be, you know, affordable for all of the users to be able to tie into the ocean outfall. It's the town of Samoa is, I mean, there's not very many households out there. You know, the City of Eureka's wastewater treatment plant, the cost for the discharge would be spread by, you know, all of the users. And Eureka currently discharges into Humboldt Bay at approximately the Elk River Slough area. And the water board has expressed concerns about discharging into the bay and would prefer that they discharge out into the ocean. And it's more of an informational item as opposed to a proposal. And there's no assumption that Eureka is going to connect into the ocean outfall at some point in the future. It's just that the ocean outfall absolutely has the capacity for their wastewater discharge.
Thank you. I guess we're still with the public. Any other comments or questions from the public? Okay, bringing it back. Just what will be the process? You said it's going to go out and you're going to talk to the users and then take public input. In what process will we be taking public input on this? Or is this just at future meetings? Or?
Yeah, this is very similar to, I guess I would put this in the same breath as kind of the relocation plan that the board just reviewed. We did a preliminary where we kind of just opened it up to the public, kind of presented it. And then, you know, we kind of went out and kind of worked with the tenants. These are the people that are primarily the most interested in this, the DG Fairhaven, you know, the Terra Taylor Mariculture, the Nordic Aqua Farms, you know, and the Peninsula Community Service District. You know, those are the users that are they're the ones that are going to be paying the fees. And so they're the ones that are going to want to look at these numbers the closest. Obviously, other people are interested and we want to hear their opinions. But then the goal is to have meetings with them and then come back in your meeting in July and then report out on what we heard, or hopefully they would, if they have some concerns, that they would present those to and the board, so the board could hear those directly from them.
Great, thank you. And there's no action on this item tonight?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Then we can move on to our last item, the Humboldt Bay Oyster Company lease amendment and approval of sublease from Humboldt Bay Oyster Company to Hog Island Oyster Company.
Okay, I can field this one. So Humboldt Bay Oyster Company has three leases from the Harbor District. They're all up in the Mad River Slough portion of the bay. One is in Mad River Slough proper, and then two of them are in the Mad River Channel. They have culture operations within all of those. Now there's two items on the agenda that we're asking the board to consider that have to do with those leases. One is consideration of a proposed amendment to their existing lease, and the second is to approve a sublease to another entity within a portion of their existing leases. I'll briefly talk about item one now, and then I'll talk about item two. So for item one, as discussed here, the original lease language has very specific methods that are allowed within those areas. It specifically calls for maintenance of rafts and or oyster stakes. And that specific language has become too specific for the types of culture that are done in the bay currently. Currently in the bay, it's what's known on basket on long line or rack and bag culture. These just aren't methods that are currently used in the bay. So what we're asking the board to do is to allow for amendment of the lease to strike that language that's specific to the methods, such that the lease will basically just say that shellfish can be cultured within those areas. And then it'll be up to the specific permits and CEQA documentation to drive what the specific methods are going to be. And then so for the second item, I'll go over them both and then make questions at the end. For the second item, Humboldt Bay Oyster Company has requested that we approve subleasing a certain portion of their leases. And this is a requirement that Humboldt Bay Oyster Company's existing lease states that they shall not sublease any portion of their lease without written approval from the Harbor District. So there's an area within, it overlaps within both their lease A and lease B, where they would like to sublease it to Hog Island Oyster Company. This is the legal description. And then, so, you know, through this arrangement, then Hog Island would sublease this area. There's currently no shellfish culture within it. Hog Island would go through the permitting CEQA process to get the permits. And then once they get the permits, they would establish a farm within that sublease area. And that's really the extent of my presentation. Again, two items that we're asking you to consider, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'd like to make a motion at this point. This is Pat.
In favor. Are you going to make a motion for both?
Yes. And also, I'd like to thank Todd Van Herp, and it looks like there's been extensive negotiation between Humboldt Bay Oyster Company and Hog Island, and that's to the benefit of the aquaculture industry and also to assist us in making a very difficult decision in unforeseen circumstances. And so I'm appreciative that this has come to us in this forum, and it sounds like this issue is resolved, and I'm most pleased.
Thank you. Well, we have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second?
I'll second. Yep. Go ahead.
That was a tie.
Go ahead, Richard.
Okay, Richard has a second. We're giving it to Richard by a nose. Do we have any other discussion or comments from the board on this? I would just like to mention that, so this is allowing for a sublease, and that's not, this is just on a one-time basis for this particular instance because of the certain circumstances. This is not saying that we would typically allow for subleases on, for oyster leases, is that correct?
That's correct. All our leases have language that, no sublease shall be entered into without written approval by the district. So it'd be on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, good.
And I just note that the, you know, once sublease, the sublessee, in this case Hog Island, would be subject to the same terms and conditions as are stated in the lease between us and our current tenant. And the current tenant would remain obligated as well to the district for the actions within the subleased area.
Thank you. Okay, hearing nothing else from the board, I'll move it to the public. Any comments from the public on this item?
Ken Slotsky, yes please, Stephen.
Go ahead, Ken.
I'd like to echo what Patrick said. I also went ahead, you know, Todd working with this out, and it was a difficult situation that everybody found themselves in. And I also wanted to thank Adam Wagshall for participating in the process, and all of you making this come to fruition. So sometimes right and fair just seems to win out, and it takes a whole team to make it happen. So I wouldn't personally, and I understand you have a clause in there, you know, regarding subleases. I personally would consider that to be proper, but I think it's something you shouldn't preclude. I think you may find that you may need to allow people to do subleases on a lot of these, but I would still support the policy you have of having that come back before you. So good job.
Thank you, Kent. Any more comments from the public?
Ben Scott Frazier, Blue Lake. I'm representing both Audubon California and California Waterfowl Association on this topic. And we would like to support the staff recommendation for the amendment and the 20-acre sublease.
Okay, thank you. And anyone else? Hearing none, I'll bring it back up to the board for a vote. We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Higgins.
Yes.
Commissioner Marks.
Yes.
Commissioner Doss.
Yes.
Commissioner Dale.
Yes.
And President Coleman.
Yes. Okay, moving on. It says we have no permits, so we can move on to adjournment. Thank you very much, everybody. Stay safe out there. Remember that the virus is still out there and ticking back up. So please take personal responsibility and consideration of our neighbors when you think about your actions in public. Have a very good night.
Yabba dabba do.
Get your halibut safely if you can.
There you go. Just for the halibut, right, Pat?
Just for the halibut.
Yeah, preferably under 30. They're a little tough over 30. The ones offshore right now, 300 feet are perfect.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm ready to kayak out that far right now. We're doing it.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night. Good night.